Well, thank you for listening to the Radio Radar Plus podcast. This is episode 10, a special episode that we are recording live, sort of, in San Diego.
Are we live?
This is we're all sitting in a room, a hotel room. This is probably why the audio quality sounds a little different. Thank you for joining. I'm Ludwig Hitzman. I'm the editor-in-chief for U.S. side of Games Radar Plus, which is kind of like a very tiny, tiny sheet that you can look at in your computer.
Yeah.
And you can zoom in on it. And when you zoom in on it, you get more and more information. The closer you get.
Yeah. I see where you're going with this.
It's kind of like you look at the microns, and each micron is some video game.
That's what they teach you, is that the universe is made up of microns.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm glad you're staying.
Infinite microns.
I'm glad you're staying with me on this. I'm joined by Maxwell McGee.
Hello, everyone.
And Sophia Tong.
Hello.
My boss. I have to say that every time.
Oh, yeah, right. She's my double boss. She's
my double boss for me. Secret boss.
Yeah, my bonus boss. Really
and
in
then Anthony John Agnello.
Ludwig, you did not properly explain how you said it was live that we're recording this in a hotel room. You didn't explain that we're literally positioned as though it's a slumber party.
We are.
It is
There's
a slumber
pillows.
Party.
Pillows.
I should put on my jammy jams.
Yeah. I consider your every onesie. Podcast a slumber party.
We're going to get some onesies before the show is over.
Onesies will have... Anybody who is listening to this on Friday, onesies will happen at some point.
If you guys have any recommendations for onesies we should get, we have access to like all we want. Like a bear costume.
They're nearby.
Like
check out our YouTube page. I'm sure that's where it's gonna end.
Yeah, check out our YouTube page. There will be onesies before this.
I really hate the ones that you have to put together yourself.
That's not a onesie.
Exactly.
That's ridiculous.
The problem.
Yeah, have you had to put a onesie
together?
No. Has this been a problem?
You buy a onesie and it says some assembly required. Like, no. Something's wrong.
What
here.
If it's an Avengers themed onsie?
Ooh.
What
does it have a little shield?
No, it's like you might want a butt flap. For your onesie.
It's practical.
Like a traditional pair of
That's
like old
practical.
School onesie like pajamas. So maybe you could have to assemble your own butt flap.
Okay.
Where, like you
it's
cut
like,
it,
pin
and
it on.
Numbers. Yeah.
Right. Well, this seems like something that you could buy at Comic-Con.
Right. Very but possibly. It would be like an Adventure Time butt flap onesie.
Or like a Ninja Turtles thing.
What kind of Ninja Turtle need a butt flap?
It's a shell. It's just a very small shell.
That wasn't canon.
I have studied Ninja Turtles anatomy, and I know for a fact that they don't have that butt flap shell down there.
There's one guy, he's a 50-year-old man.
He's just out there yelling in the booth. Yeah.
Hey, you shouldn't be selling these.
I've done the anatomical charts that disprove your onesie theory.
Those charts are also available for sale.
Yes, you can. He also has his own separate booth.
That's how he makes his money.
He sells turtles and anatomical charts like Leonardo da Vinci's David of Ninja Turtles.
No, what you see here is the proper placement of the shell, not over with those charlatans!
This ain't Hollywood!
Selling their crappy butt flap onesie.
Just
shell.
Ridiculous. But do tune in for that butt flap onesie. Come and
see. Pseudoscience. That's what it is. So... Give me your report back on Comic-Con. Anthony, what is...
The San Diego Comic-Con.
What's great about this show?
What is great about the show?
This is your first Comic-Con, isn't it?
This is my very... Yeah, this is my very first San Diego Comic-Con. It is truly as big as its reputation. Like, you're not... Like, I don't mean, like, there are so many stars. I mean, like, it's the physical size of the show floor... is larger than anything I've ever been privy to. It honestly does dwarf E3. Mm-hmm. Just in terms of, like, sheer coverage of space.
Right, because E3, they'll divide it up between, like, two different
it's two
areas,
big, yeah.
And then a little bridge connecting them, whereas this is just one massive,
yeah.
Endless hangar.
Well, Sophia, this morning we were walking up to the convention center, and you pointed out that it looks like a battle star, like Edward James Olmos.
Which I met once in an elevator here.
Oh,
hey,
really?
That's fun.
Was he just like, you look lovely?
Did you get him to narrate something for you?
No, he was with his handler.
Oh, that's too bad.
But yeah, people were talking to him, and he was really polite. He nice.
Did insinuate that Harrison Ford was actually a robot.
What?
That was a thing.
Really?
Spoilers.
Spoilers.
1982 film.
Spoilers for the actual Harrison Ford. Oh.
But yeah, the convention center does look like
it looks
giant.
Like a yeah, it looks like a battle star, and I'm impressed. Again, it's Thursday, so it's day one of my first one. So I haven't witnessed the full human tide that comes with it.
Well, you've also been hosting all day.
Yes, Maxwell and I have been sitting in the most well climate controlled portion.
It is surprisingly cool up there. It's I don't know how you guys did it. It's brisk up
top of the loot crate.
Yeah.
We live in a giant loot crate.
Our booth is one giant loot crate. If you guys haven't seen a picture of it, it's a giant box that opens up at the top, and then where it opens up is where our stage is. So it is in fact one we unboxed ourselves basically.
And appropriately we have a view of just the expanse of the video games that are available to try.
Which is like half of Capcom and Nintendo.
Right.
That's the game presence.
This is a real thing, though. When I had a brief moment to wander the entire show floor, and I found Konami actually has a huge booth on the show floor.
Really?
And
just a giant tombstone. That
There's just a man chiseling the effigy
There is one dude dressed like Alucard, his wig is half falling off, and he's just like, No!
They shut us down last year. We've been here for 364 days.
We knew you'd be back.
This is the weird thing. There's no Metal Gear, no Pro Evolution Soccer. It is literally an enormous booth with only Yu-Gi-Oh! Stuff.
That is saddest. Oh, I walked by
it perfectly representing
it is
the company.
It is also that is swamped. That is, there are people everywhere.
They're in there.
Did you walk through a time rift and that's actually the Konami booth from
2004?
They know their target audience.
No, from 2020.
It's from the time is a flat circle. It's all just coming around. Yu-Gi-Oh! You know,
that's the future.
All.
No more Metal Gear. No more Pro Evolution Soccer.
Yu-Gi-Oh!
Just
Yu-Gi-Oh!
Mobile Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yu-Gi-Oh! Was there in the beginning and it shall be there in the end.
A polite... polite young man came up to me and was like, are you ready to
duel?
I said, sir, not today.
No, thank you.
Not today.
I'm busy. Sophia, you had a story to tell us about a haunted house.
Oh, yes. So, COD Blops, Call of Duty.
That's not what it's called.
Black Ops 3. They were doing this zombie experience across the street from the convention center, and...
And we thought it was a haunted house.
We did.
We were banking on it being just like you walk through and people jump out and try to scare you, but that's not what it was.
Yeah, so Max, Letty, and I were there in this, I guess, this hangar, and so the haunted house. So there was this whole, like, flappers-themed thing going on. There's, like, girls in their dresses, and...
Mm-hmm.
We wait in line for probably, what, half an hour?
Got drills on a little bit.
Yes.
But it's all good.
And then suddenly, this giant group cuts us in line.
Oh, yeah.
And we're able to tag in at the end. And then we see Seth Green walking by us with his giant entourage.
With
his bros.
And I have to keep pointing this out. And Zachary Levi.
Right.
Nope. Just
Although
Seth Green.
Although I completely missed
him.
Yeah. I only saw Seth Green.
But yeah, no. He has his bros.
Specify who
of TVs.
And his
Chuck.
Girls. Yeah, I can't believe... I actually know who that guy is, but I didn't notice. Anyway. Did he have facial hair? Because that was throwing
it. He had a hat on. He was wearing a cap.
Made up. Anyway, so it was one of those escape room experiences where you're locked in a room and you had these clues and, you know... This time it was actually narrated. Some dude was actually helping you get through.
Mm-hmm.
So...
And there was a zombie coming out of the fireplace.
It's dark. There's
Evil
zombies
magician's house.
Grabbing you and... I don't know. I couldn't see a thing.
Wait, there is a zombie in the room.
Well,
they're coming out of the windows and through the fireplace and stuff. Yeah, they're not up in there with you. Touching
they're like, don't
and
touch
stuff.
The zombies. But
yeah,
they are
so you had to sign a waiver that was like, don't touch the people. They're not gonna touch you. It's dangerous, but a safe kind of dangerous.
So you don't blops it up and like
you don't
have
blops
like,
any zombies.
No.
You are contractually obligated not to blops any zombies
or to shoot them. Really?
Yeah.
Like that's
the game
upon.
Itself was not there.
Is that the language in the waiver that
I
you
wish
decided?
It was.
It's like,
I
please
wish
do
it
not
was.
Blops
there was
the
something
zombies.
That you read in the waiver.
The waiver used the language was that you now enter into a
covenant
not
oh.
to sue.
Oh, that's
not
right.
To blops.
To blops or not to blops.
Enter the covenant.
Into
so
the
now you're beset by bros.
Right.
And
well,
oh,
he had
yeah.
like an entourage of blonde girls also fawning over him too.
Oh my god.
But I find out today that they actually plant, well, they call them plants, well, actors in the room
oh.
so that if you're stuck, they'll kind of help you out. Like, hey, everyone's like, oh yeah, it's teamwork, work together. If you find a clue, let everyone know. So every now and then you'll hear some guy say like, oh, I found something over here. I can't see a thing.
I know.
Letty and I opened this chest. We're like, well, there's nothing in it. It's so
not,
no.
It's not like just dry ice in here.
There's no zombie, like, fitfully pointing at the corner, like
right over here. Lift this thing. Yeah, no. So we found nothing. Well, I don't know. I don't think Max
was
really trying.
I was just enjoying. I was just watching
just
it.
Just watching the whole thing.
When
unfold.
You do an escape room, you're going to do. It was basically an escape room designed for, like, four people, maybe. Because there,
yes,
there was basically
like
one puzzle.
15
find the key,
of us in there.
Unlock the thing, move the thing over. Yeah,
yeah,
and there were 15 to 20
of
us
were
in there.
Part of Seth's entourage. Well,
right.
Evelyn, 11.
And they were petting his spikes, being like, can't hardly wait with magic.
Plus, I mean, how many times do you,
sure
are you in a room?
Buffy at some point.
Are you in a room with Seth Green and his entourage, and you're watching him solve a zombie puzzle?
Yeah, he was getting way into it.
He was so into
really
it. That was kind of the great thing. Is like,
and his entourage,
was all
I think, was just like
it.
Encouraging him. They're like, oh yeah, you'll his whole entourage is
they all
pose
around
him.
It's like Power
like
Rangers.
Arms
they
around
all
him like,
did they give him a milk crate to stand on?
No.
No.
So you can see
how
I was using it at the time.
Although I think Levy is taller than Seth Green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we were able to eyeball that.
Yeah, or like, yeah,
I think you got a few inches on him, yeah.
Yeah, nice. I do. But so that was our celebrity sighting
that was
on
our,
a Wednesday night.
Our big Comic Con celebrity sighting.
But we didn't solve any puzzles.
We did not.
No.
We just enjoyed.
We just, like, people watched. And that's
but
part of Comic-Con's appeal. You can just watch people.
The spectacle.
Right.
The spectacle.
That wasn't our only Blops experience as a crew, though.
No.
Max and I got to actually hang out with the creative leads on Blops 3 Zombies. Cod Blops 3 Zombies. Which is starring Jeff Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum as a washed-up magician. And every other human.
And every other
human. But they announced a special collector's edition today.
They did.
They did.
They did. It comes
and they
with
talked
a,
about it.
It comes with a unique item. It comes with a...
It's too much. It's too much.
I just,
it's too much.
Let's talk about this logistically.
Here, okay, let me sit up for this. Let me sit
up. Get up. Because logistically... I understand how night vision goggles, which came with Modern Warfare 3's
right,
limited edition.
Right,
that's relevant.
Two? That's
was
relevant
too, actually.
Oh,
was
Modern Warfare 3
two? The little RC drone car?
Maybe.
There was a drone car,
a
and
drone
then there
car
was an actual flying drone
right
for the limited edition of Call of Duty Ghosts.
So they're like, well,
which
how
one?
Do
we... Which one came with the nucleic launch codes?
What?
Does anyone remember?
You had to get the real special edition. You really had to pony up some money for that.
Call of Duty World at War's limited edition will actually allow you to put the world
to
at
detonate
war.
A small yield nuclear device in Little. So they were like, well, how do we top the flying drone?
Right, and this was their special Comic-Con announcement.
Yeah.
This morning, they announced that COD Blops 3's limited edition comes with a small refrigerator.
Yes.
Do they call it a mini?
It is a mini fridge.
One that perhaps a baby might
I
use.
Would, you could say.
It's just that small.
Let's be clear. It is not a fridge that is the size for a baby to be in.
No.
Because
no.
You would never,
we're
ever
talking
do that.
Baby proportions.
Baby proportions.
Proportions.
Like, if a baby needed to keep something.
Right.
Cool.
A tiny baby, you know, jug of milk.
Right.
A tiny baby, you know, thing of margarine.
Like half of a baby bologna sandwich.
Exactly.
I don't know if they're ready
exactly.
for solid foods yet. I don't know.
It's a saltine with a little piece of bologna on
here's
it.
Here's my thing, though. It is a baby-sized fridge on an M for mature-rated game. The baby can't go and buy.
Well,
this
now
game.
I wonder if it's like, because when I hear the phrase baby fridge,
right?
I wonder, is it the standard like square cube,
mm-hmm.
like mini fridge, like you'd see a college person have, or there are also like the like little mini fridges that are designed to hold like six canned drinks,
right?
Just like a little six pack in there.
Here's the thing: it is the exact same shape and proportions
mm-hmm.
as a large size fridge.
Right.
But there's
but
a soft spot
down.
On the top. Soft,
where the shell hasn't completely formed
it's
yet.
It's not completely formed. So don't rest
wait,
your
wait. Are you saying that if I love and nurture my mini fridge, it will eventually grow into a strong, healthy, full size refrigerator?
You would have to ask an Activision representative.
His name may or may not be Johnny. We're not confirming.
I cannot speak to that.
It's clearly getting late.
Just a little bit.
Why? This is a legitimate question for people.
I like the mini fridge idea. For practical.
Video game industry professionals. It is practical.
It's practical.
I suppose it does speak
I'll get
to
more
me.
Use out of that than night vision goggles.
Right. But, why?
Because that's where you put your Mountain Dew.
And your Doritos.
You guys don't put your Doritos in the fridge when you're done.
Your special
How do you even play Call of Duty without your Mountain Dew?
You
must suck. Your KD ratio must be terrible.
I wonder how hard they fought to get the Call of Duty beer hat, and they just weren't able to do it. You could put Mountain Dew in the beer hat. You have the two Mountain Dew bottles on either side of your head with the straw and everything. It's so obvious, but that'd be too on the nose.
If you have ranch Doritos.
Oh, dear.
No, they don't start that way. You can put them into the mini fridge.
Oh, no.
And then they cool down. They become
it's
cool
like the Budweiser, you cool it down and it turns blue.
Right.
You know it's cold.
So, actually, as far as game announcements, I think what we're discussing is exemplary of that, as far as new things coming up, Comic-Con has not been especially exciting for video
games
yet.
It's not always the biggest.
No.
It's
more about the movies and TV shows.
It's about the movies and TV shows.
Well, I don't know. I sat in on a panel that was... It was about how technology was being leveraged to increase the emotional resonance of a video game.
What was the title?
Well, hang on. I mean, You've got
we'll
faces, right?
We'll
more detailed faces let you show better emotion. Because as we know, if you see emotion...
Better tears.
Feel emotion.
If you see emotion in a video game, you feel that same emotion.
Of course.
Empathy. We all know that. That's why, you cry with Heavy Rain.
It's called Cage's Law.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cage's Law has proved this
he
multiple times.
He said that now.
And, this game had better characters than ever before, so that you could really feel the touching relationship between them.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, of course, Gears of War Ultimate Edition, which is looking really good.
It's a 9-year-old.
Were you able to actually see what was going on, or was it too dark?
I mean,
it was good.
It was technologically sound, and you will if you buy an Xbox One as of August 25th, you get the game.
Really?
You just get it.
It just comes with
it. It's bundled with every Xbox.
Every version of all the different sizes.
If I get the one with the Kinect, or
just the standard
Kinect?
One.
Standard
just
Xbox.
Like the if you get the vanilla Xbox, you get a free game.
Oh, you mean if you buy a new one?
Yes.
Oh, it's okay.
Not like
for a second I thought
it's
if
not
you
bad.
If
retroactively
you
giving everyone.
If you
already have one, you have to pay $40, which I think is pretty reasonable given all the work that is going into it.
Yeah.
Right.
It doesn't have Horde mode because that wasn't in the original game. They're really just sticking to what was there in the first place. But it is a very large-scale remake. It's not just a, visual polishing. And I think what they want to do is just kick the series off to the status that it had when we were getting Gears of War 3, right? When it was at the peak of its popularity.
Gears of War 1 doesn't make sense.
Right.
Narratively, on any level, it is incomprehensible as a story with a beginning, a middle, and end. A dude with no neck is invited to leave a dark room. And then he is handed a chainsaw that also goes bang. Eventually, he rides a train where a large bald man with sharp teeth yells at him, and you have to shoot him a lot, and then it stops. This is not...
Well, you clearly missed the part that had all the juice.
did you look
at all the juice? Did you examine the juice closely?
That's a good point. I didn't collect all of the cogs.
Which now give you comic book pages.
Ooh.
Oh, that's actually cool.
Yeah, there's a little more to it. If you like collectibles and action games, which I typically don't, but...
I know, are they tying in any more of the Gears of War expanded universe that's been established since the first game came out?
Probably.
Get that Aspero Fields novel in there.
I mean, I'd play again, because I can't remember all these things that had happened.
I just told you the entire plot of the game.
He might have just.
I
want to
relive it.
Oh no! There is one other thing that happens in the middle of it before you get to ride the train that the bald guy with sharp teeth is on. You go and meet a man with a cowboy hat, and he says, "Don't go down that road because the movie Pitch Black is happening down there."
You're like, "That's a really specific reference." But I believe you. Yeah.
But yeah, and then you go and tidy sharp. Bat things.
Yep.
If you
have to shine the flashlight on them.
You go in the dark,
flashlight.
Vin Diesel doesn't show up, but it's the same.
I think they're the bats that show up when you get XP in Batman games.
Is that the link? Is that the link? Are these universes
linked? They have to go somewhere.
Canonically sound. Perfect.
The planet Sarah is actually Gotham City.
Does anybody ever say, when you play, like, Arkham Asylum, Arkham City, Arkham Knight, does anybody ever stop after one of those fights and be like, did you guys see all those bats?
Did you guys see the bats?
Hold on.
There's a lot of bats.
There are, like, a lot of bats.
And they're just out. They're just out, like, interacting with us.
When Batman broke your hand, did you see a bunch of numbers appear above him?
Did bats come out of your face when he was, like, hitting you in the face? I feel like that happened.
Master Bruce, I hope you know that I have filled your cape with the requisite number of bats for this evening.
Or as you like to refer to them as krill.
I get it. You'll need to shine them with this flashlight and chase them off.
Well, with that, we're gonna smoothly move over to a different section of the show in which I speak to someone about the movies and the TV shows at Comic-Con, because you can't really cover Comic-Con without discussing that stuff. So, sound effect. Okay, we're still here in San Diego, which is currently being consumed by this gigantic nerd biomass. Which is completely normal because it's Comic-Con. And I'm here with our film and video experts, our film and TV experts. I'm joined by Rosie.
Hello.
And Richard.
Hello.
And David.
Hi there.
So you guys are the expert. You guys need to tell me what is important. What's really cool at this year's show? And what are you noticing already?
Well, for me, I think it's DC and Warner's to lose. So Saturday is the big day. We're going to see Batman versus Superman, mm-hmm. Dawn of Justice stuff. It's going to be Suicide Squad stuff. And I think that's going to be a real event. I think there's going to be loads of exciting things there.
Yeah, I agree. And the reason why they stand to come out on top here is because there's actually less movie stuff than usual.
Also Marvel, which has kind of owned the last quite a few Comic-Cons, really. You know, they've revealed all the characters, they've revealed films, and they're not here this year.
Yeah.
So DC has a clear run of it. And actually, Batman vs. Superman was first announced here 2 years ago, and this will be Batman v. Superman's third Comic-Con, which is kind of unprecedented for films.
So we're saying, actually, that they stand to do really well out of this, but actually, surely, the elephant in the room is Star Wars tomorrow, because that's what I'm most looking forward to.
It is. I mean, of course, we're being told that there's not going to be any footage.
So there's no exclusive press material, no footage. We're all so hyped by it that potentially film studios were frightened away because they were like, oh my gosh, I can't compete.
Is that elephant in the room the one that you see playing an instrument in the cantina? Is it that elephant? Or is it just... Oh, you mean the metaphorical kind. Okay, I'm on board.
There's actually just...
It's Drooping McCool, isn't it?
No, is that
his name? Oh, is he the...
It's the Max Rebo band.
Max Rebo. It is Max Rebo. Drooping McCool is the...
Why did I reveal that I knew that?
but actually, because of that, it seems to me that TV is way more prominent than it's been in previous years. Mm-hmm. I mean, just in terms of the branding downtown and the way that the convention takes over the city, it feels loads more about TV. The big spots right opposite the convention that people have to walk past to get in are taken up by Blind Spot and Heroes Reborn, whereas in previous years you might have seen Total Recall or something there. Same for
The Marriott, the Hilton Mother next door has The Strain and Minority Report, again, TV shows.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the roundtables and press lines that we've done so far have been for TV. So, we saw CBS today, you saw The Last Ship earlier on, right? Mm-hmm. And Doctor Who, of course, was big.
But the thing is, though, you've got so many. There are lots of TV shows here, and there's lots of shows which are Comic-Con friendly. I mean, there's so many. There's comic book shows, there's science fiction shows, detective shows. You know, there's so much here that to appeal. And also, these are shows that people are watching every week. Then they kind of get engaged in them in a way that you perhaps don't have felt. You know, they're characters that they come to love, and actually seeing these characters, these actors in the flesh is actually a bigger deal than often seeing, you know, movie stars.
Maybe it's because I'm more of a movie fan, being a total film girl. I don't know. I think it's a bit of a shame because I think for me, Comic Con, it is the moment where you see the Batman Superman logo and you're in Hall H and everyone's going what? Yeah,
people were excited to see the suit like up close in a glass.
Or like Loki turning up, the other year, and again, everybody went crazy. Yeah. It was amazing.
Look, it was right, actually. You know, one of the things that was in the show hall, though, in the main convention floor, where all the stands are. Although the TV studios are really up their game. Actually, I really liked the DC stand that had the Batman vs. Superman costumes on there. That's probably one of the best things I've seen in the hall itself.
Well, it's a chance to see it up close. Yeah. But they're just saying that, you know, on the Marvel stand, they've traditionally had recreations of Thor's throne room, you know, really big sets.
And all the Iron Man costumes lined up,
which looked awesome. And now that they have a stage, and they will bring out cool things.
I'm right, sure. But it's Ant-Man the stage, isn't it? So what it isn't is...
Well, maybe Ant-Man is there and they've got a huge... it's just very, very small.
Well, I mean, Rosa, you said it's really about Batman v Superman. Like, this is the first throwdown of this battle that we perceive between Marvel and DC. Is that accurate, though? Are movies really in competition like that? Because I feel like people are willing to spare the 5 hours to see, you know, two movies.
Oh, I think they are, though. DC. Well, so Marvel owns the world, right? Well, Disney owns the world, but Marvel certainly owns the comic
book. Well, I mean, I think Marvel probably own a continent in Disney's empire, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, exactly. And they've done so well, and they've been so consistent. And when I say Marvel, I mean MCU particularly, because we should talk later about the Fox.
I think the interesting thing is, if you look at the actual characters, your really big hitters in comic books traditionally have been Batman and Superman. Mm-hmm. And Marvel kind of came out, and when they started producing their own films, they came out with Iron Man, which was very much a second division character, and they turned him into a hero, and then that set the tone for these movies. They were exciting, but they were also fun and occasionally tongue-in-cheek. And then, you know, 10 years ago, who would have believed that an Iron Man movie, Iron Man 3, would have been made more money than Man of Steel?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right,
absolutely. Right. Yeah,
and because DC are playing catch-up, and Marvel had this big plan of bringing all these movies together in this long story, and they would all join together. And then DC sort of met Man of Steel. I was like, oh God, what do we do? And then they're sort of bringing them all into Dawn of Justice.
But really quickly, because of course you have Man of Steel, and then of course Dawn of Justice, but we're already introducing Wonder Woman. And then it's like, okay.
And Aquaman. And Cyborg. And
have a slate of 10 more films up to 2020. They're really trying to bring it, they're really trying to emulate it. But in a way, this year and Saturday particularly is their big chance to own it, to win it, to have people really get on board with that, I think.
I mean, Batman, there is a lot of love for Batman and Superman as characters, but it's going to be interesting to see how this goes down, because from the trailer we have seen, it's very dark and growly.
And did you see the EW cover? Batman versus Superman is all I'm going to say.
It's all the suits. It's all about the suits.
Well, is it? Well, is it the suit or is it the pies?
However, actually, you mentioned this, I'm just going to throw this in there. EW also did a special edition with Deadpool on the cover. Now, we're excited about Deadpool 2, right?
So excited, yes.
And Deadpool's here? Is that one?
Deadpool is here.
The Deadpool?
The Deadpool? When are they on that?
We think he's here.
We're Fox are doing stuff. And I mean, a couple of years ago... you know, on what was the Ultimate Super Saturday, when Tom Cruise was there and they revealed that it was going to be a Batman v Superman movie. Fox's sort of offering to this big day was to bring out all the X-Men from Days of Future Past. They had everyone from Patrick Stewart, who's James McAvoy. I mean, there was just tons of them, 20-odd mutants on stage. And I don't think with, you know, the X universe is so big. I mean, they've got X-Men Apocalypse next year, Deadpool, there is a Gambit movie to the end of next year, there's another Wolverine. You know, this is their attempt to emulate the MCU, and they did so well at Comic-Con a couple of years ago, they're not going to pass that chance up, are they?
So we were having a little bit of a look earlier on the Internet Movie Database homepage for Deadpool, and you'll notice now that the main image for Deadpool is him wearing a sombrero and a
poncho
with a placard saying Comic-Con, por favor. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of playfulness, and that's, I think, why Deadpool's going to be...
Are they making the point that it's sort of lower budget and smaller than the other movies, that they can't actually afford to get in here on
the plane? But I mean, is the success that Marvel has seen, do you think, and you can maybe you've seen something at San Diego Comic-Con that informs what you're about to say, but are they successful because of how their characters are linked together, or because of how they curate... basically the directors that they work with?
Well, that's definitely with DC,
it seems a very different approach, because it's in the hands of Zack Snyder for the most part.
Right.
Well, and David Goyer.
But that's interesting about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, isn't it? And I think that it's what they managed to do is they can use that universe to create different genres of movies that all fit together, which... seamlessly. So they do fantasy with Thor, but then they do a Cold War espionage film in Captain America 3, and then you have... there's the team up film, and then you have a kind of high tech film, mm-hmm. and actually they're all quite different, but genres.
Yeah, they all fit together.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. I mean, who would believe? You know, the Avengers should not work.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
I mean, that's part of the point of the Avengers.
But, yeah. But what I mean is that you're right. So they've got different directors on, and they're taking the different tones to do quite different genres. So you can actually just enjoy Thor for what it is, but without the feeling.
I think though that. It kind of almost operates like a TV show. TV shows traditionally a producer's medium. You know, you have your showrunner mm-hmm. who manages, and the directors come in, and they're directors for hire.
And they fit
the showrunner's vision. And I think that's kind of happened with Marvel, because you've got Kevin Feige, the big executive producer, who's kind of the big overseer of it all.
Right, so
and has his big, he has his big chart, and he sort of plots all these timelines and stuff. And you know, he's hiring the directors. And you know, if a director isn't working, they've left, they've replaced them. It was like famously Edgar Wright and Ant-Man, and mm-hmm. he'd been developing it for nearly a decade, and he's gone. But, you know, Peyton Reed came in, who for years was attached to Fantastic Four. And
everyone was worried about it.
And it was, and it's got spilled, you know, amazing again, reviews.
It's had great reviews, you know, TF's given it four.
When was the last time, you know, Marvel don't make bad movies.
They don't make bad movies, unfortunately.
They're doing a Pixar, you know. It's,
yeah. But I don't think that's necessarily true with DC, and I think DC have more to prove here.
You know, if you look at Man of Steel, which
it was all right.
Yeah,
but you needed more
a lot of
right
people, and it was certainly not a fun movie. And there's still so much love for the Christopher Reeve, well, certainly the first two Christopher Reeve movies, which had I don't know, it was almost the joy about Superman, right. and you know. They made Superman the alien in the Man of Steel, and sort of really played up that and his angst and stuff. But Superman sort of is something else. He's not Batman.
I tell you what, I'm just going to leap in there, because one of the most interesting interviews that I did today was for the Death of Superman Lives, What Happened documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And so I met the director and producer of that, John Schneck, and
so that's discovering how that Superman movie came out.
Exactly,
how Nicolas Cage was nearly
Nicolas
Superman.
Cage was nearly Superman,
and they're launching it today, so it's available today here on Blu-ray and video on demand, and it's very interesting. And they've got to see they've interviewed everyone for this documentary that they put together, apart from Nick Cage, but they're speaking to Tim Burton and Kevin Smith and people are really, and they've seen
Kevin Smith was the scriptwriter,
that's right.
who was asked to put in a giant mechanical spider.
Exactly, and they've seen the 45-minute test footage of Nick Cage, and it sounds crazy, and that was absolutely fascinating talking about that, because we could have had a very different Justice League if you can imagine an alternative 1990s where it's Michael Keaton as Batman, Nick Cage as Superman,
and
then
that was a George Miller thing.
Why not Val Kilmer?
I mean, George Miller was supposed to do that, right, at some
point.
Right,
I'm not sure if that would have been that issue. Yeah, I mean, George Miller was attached to it for quite a while. I think mm-hmm. Wolfgang Peterson as well. And I think, Nicolas Cage seems a really odd choice now, but you've got to remember, back then, mid-90s, he was an action star. I mean, when he did The Rock, Con Air, and Face Off.
Yeah.
It was a really unlikely thing for this guy who'd done Leaving Las Vegas, won an Oscar, and then became an action hero.
Yeah. But the vision of that, Tim Burton's vision for that film, would have been vastly different. I mean, they were talking about combining Lex Luthor and Brainiac into the Lexiac.
I think that happened in Justice League Unlimited.
Right. Oh yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
Where you will buy more things. I think you'll believe anything that happens in this cartoon. Whereas a live action film, you have to work hard to sell.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a billionaire combining with an alien intelligence. So you mentioned that movies seem a little light this year, and I'm wondering if that's because of how much Marvel and Disney have kind of just eaten the entirety of Hollywood. Like, that's Hollywood now. It's like everyone talks about the upcoming Hollywood films, they mean a superhero film usually.
I think
5 or 6 years ago, there was very much, we've got to take our films, this will make our movie. Because, I mean, Iron Man was the big one, you know, that people were skeptical mm-hmm. about Iron Man. Jon Favreau turned up, showed the first footage of it, and it went down a storm. And, you know, suddenly Iron Man became the movie that people were talking about. But then that kind of flipped round a couple of years later when Scott Pilgrim came here.
Yeah,
and, you know,
yeah.
Scott Pilgrim was up a skyscraper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was dominating the skyline. Edgar Wright marched people from Hall H to a cinema for a screening. It was big.
Nobody went to see it.
I think, you know, that burnt them a little bit. It's like, oh, actually, we're spending loads of money bringing these films to Comic-Con, but is it actually worth it?
Exactly. If we think of, like, mainstream movies as comic book movies are mainstream movies now,
right.
So maybe it's time for Comic-Con to retake its niche, basically.
Well, perhaps. So what I was going to say is, but having said that, it isn't just about comic book movies. So the main... scoop of the day, the news of the day. The most exciting thing that happened today was the Hunger Games, of course, Mockingjay Part 2, which, so we had the cast, including the marvellous Jennifer Lawrence, turn up.
She
for
can do
age.
No wrong.
She is amazing. Yeah. Everybody adores her. Yes, certainly I do. they showed new features in the crowd and went wild. And there is still a place for that. And again...
Yeah. Well, but I think to say... I mean, Comic-Con, I think, is a misleading name in a way, because I think it is, it's a festival of popular culture. It's celebrating... I think that their slogan is celebrating the popular arts.
Right, absolutely true. No, I'll just to qualify that, though, you're right, except that if you took away all the things that we've been talking about, the movies and TV, it would still be the biggest comic convention in the world. I mean,
but it's also, you could argue, it's possibly the biggest TV convention in the world, the biggest movie convention in the world. You know, it does all of those things, and they all come together. But it just so happens that at the moment, the big movie and TV phenomenon is comics.
And it doesn't feel like that long ago that the thing that made all the front page news about Comic-Con was Twilight and the queues that went around the block and people
couldn't get in to watch the Avatar panel because people had so many Twihards are queued to get in. So
So I mean, when you mentioned that kind of variety of films and variety of things, I'm still trying to find the common thread of what is ideal. If I was someone planning an event, why would I want my movie at Comic-Con, do you think? Why? What's a good fit and what isn't a good fit?
Right. So then that's a really good point. So, for instance, at the Oscars go to Birdman and Whiplash and those things that are the darlings of film festivals, but they're not. There's no reason for them to appear in Hall H or do panels.
Well, Birdman is essentially about a superhero actor in some ways, so that's kind of interesting. I think what we were seeing, the shift, and it's not very binary. It's kind of organic in how the tastes of the mainstream...
I think the interesting thing is that the geek culture has become the mainstream now. You know, I mean, Star Wars is around for 40-odd years, nearly 40 years, and that's always sort of permeated. But now everybody is a geek.
But it's not just about geek culture. Of course, Saturday we're going to see some, or hopefully, footage from The Hateful Eight.
Tarantino kind of crosses over a little bit.
But obviously, Christoph Waltz won an Oscar for Django. And actually also for Inglourious Basterds. So it isn't just as simple as that. I mean, it's popular culture.
But I think that Tarantino kind of feels right for it because his movies are so steeped in popular culture. Whereas other people who might be also appear at Cannes.
Guillermo del Toro, who has Crimson Peak coming, and he would find Del Toro at Cannes. In fact, he was at Cannes this year.
But can you imagine the Coen brothers here?
Probably not.
Yeah, so...
Unless Marvel reps them in to do something.
Yeah, right.
I would pay to see
Squirrel
that.
Squirrel Girl?
It's just a little bit of an indefinable thing, you know, who are the kind of darlings and heroes. So we've had The Expendables were here, for example. It's an action film, something to do with comic books. But it's a larger-than-life action film. You're not going to get Fury here. Mm-hmm. But you will get David Ayer, who directed Fury. Mm-hmm. So again, it's a more nebulous thing than just comics these days.
But you're right as well about how that reflects popular, just the mainstream popular culture. So the highest grossing films of all time are Titanic, Avatar, and Avengers. So actually, if you look at where people spend their money, it's even adjusted for inflation. Gone with the Wind, but still, Star Wars is second place. So the people were. The places where people are spending their money are on the kind of films that are likely to be at Comic-Con.
Right. Although one down from that is now Fast and Furious.
Fast and Furious is fourth, isn't it?
And yeah.
Then Jurassic World, in fact.
Is that just overtaking Avengers?
Yeah, just recently. Yeah.
Did Jurassic World do that well already?
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what lessons they learned from that.
Yeah,
everyone loved the movie. They loved everything about it. Literally every scene was brilliant. Do it again.
So basically, Marvel and Naga say, well, we're doing quite well, but we need more dinosaurs.
We need more dinosaurs, yes. I feel like a Guardians of the Galaxy could bring out some dinosaurs. I believe that. So what else jumped out at you? What else is really cool this year?
Well, Doctor Who was here today. Doctor Who.
The Doctor Who.
The Doctor was here. He landed in San Diego. I mean, that was a big thing for TV. I mean, if I remember correctly, it might even have been one of the first TV shows ever in Hall H. And, what used to be the sort of show from the UK that was kind of niche TV, it kind of owned Hall H. All these people waving sonic screwdrivers around. This was Peter Capaldi's first appearance here today. So they showed a trailer and just talked about it and didn't give very much away about the new series, but talk to the fans.
Well, and that's cool. Actually, that's been a bit of a theme for the last couple of days, because I very much enjoyed seeing Lego Dimensions launch, mm-hmm. which has got the Doctor Who things. We went along there, right? And that was pretty impressive.
It was, apparently. And in fact, yesterday as well, I met up with Stephen Moffat and Rupert Graves, who... and this was not to do with Doctor Who, but about Sherlock. But again, of course,
right.
Stephen Moffat is a showrunner for both... Sherlock.
But I think Sherlock's an interesting one, because again, that's not science fiction, but it does feel right for Comic-Con.
Right, but only this time around. So again, earlier Sherlock's perhaps not, but again, it just has that kind of that credibility, I suppose. Mm-hmm. That
cachet.
Kind of, yeah, absolutely. And Benedict Cumberbatch is obviously a kind of an absolute fan darling at the minute.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think that's actually yesterday's highlight was almost certainly the Lego Dimensions launch, showing off the Doctor Who joining the Lego universe. That was great. And then today, again,
hanging out with Batman.
You can go into the TARDIS within this, and you can change the Doctor, and it can be and it's
you can regenerate. Exactly, yeah,
and you can change the TARDIS as well. Change the TARDIS.
Yeah, that was beautiful. And then today in Hall H. So today probably Hall H. Hunger Games in the morning. Doctor Who.
Well, I mean, also at Hall H. 6 or 7 years ago, there was a change in Hall H where, you know, you used to be able to walk in when you wanted, and then suddenly you had people queuing all night, and, you know, you just couldn't turn up. And today, after the Doctor Who panel, there was no queue for Hall H. There were people were saying, "You can come into Hall H now. Just walk in, mate. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity." And I can't remember last time I've seen that.
What was on after Doctor Who?
Oh yes, it was Alan Tudyk's fan film.
Con Man,
yeah.
Right. Well, okay. Which I'm quite excited about. And Felicia Day's in that, and I interviewed her this morning. So I actually put on a personal level, because I've never met her before, and I think she's great. That was good fun for me. So I met her this morning at their presentation over at Petco Park, just around the corner from the centre, and she was talking about being in Con Man, which is the crowdfunded movie about celebrities going to do conventions, which is great fun.
I spoke to another fan favourite today, Ron Perlman, who obviously was here with Hellboy many years ago, but he was talking about Hand of God, which is not a film about Diego Maradona.
It's a new Amazon thing, right? So you mentioned Hall H, and for those who are not in the know, who have never attended Comic-Con, I feel like Hall H needs to be explained a little bit.
Right.
From what I hear, the H stands for hell.
Right.
Well, what can you say about Hall H? It's a very big room. With lots of seats in it, screen.
Seats squash pretty close together.
It's the biggest.
Stay there. So it's so difficult to get into, and you have to queue for so long that everybody in there is at a state of absolutely heightened emotion. They haven't really slept. They have to stay there all day. So if you leave, you are not getting back in again.
Mm-hmm.
The foods available to you are hot dogs and nachos and pizzas. And so it's a very singular environment.
It's kind of got its own ecosystem. It's essentially the convention centre is divided from A to H. You work your way down. Our booth 241 is Gameswade. Our booth is at A. If you go down along there, it goes all the way down. And H is at the end, which is why it's H. It's off, you know, off the G. But it's the biggest venue. There are a number of venues in the convention centre. Ballrooms upstairs where they have panels. And Hall H is traditionally the one that's shaped most like a movie theatre, but a big one. I think its capacity is 6,000.
It's about 6,000-7,000. Yeah. It's not quite a movie theatre because it doesn't have any ramping. I mean, it kind of feels like a big sports hall with seats in it.
Right. Actually, that's a good example.
And they have a screen, and they have screens going back, like for people who are quite a long way away. And you know, often the big thing isn't just you have screening of footage from movies, but you have a big row of stars at the front behind a table being interviewed by a compere. I mean, that's going to be one of the big things for Star Wars, because if they're not showing footage, they're going to have to wheel out stars. And I mean, obviously Celebration, they did have Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher there, but will they the Big E and get Harrison Ford out for this? And also there's a hint that they might be revealing some of the stars who we haven't been revealed their characters yet. So
is this the point where they will reveal the long sort of roadmap for upcoming Star Wars movies, or will they just focus on Episode 7 first?
Well, they have, because we already know that Rogue One, which is out next year, is set
before
the Rebels capturing the Death Star plans.
Gareth Edwards on board directing that. Gareth Edwards, did Godzilla, which was here a couple of years ago.
And then we know that Episode 8 will be directed by Rian Johnson, who did Looper, which is a great choice, because great director. And then the year after that, there is the second standalone film, which is about Han Solo. So someone's got to an enviable task of stepping into Harrison Ford's shoes, and that's directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, who did the Lego movie and are directing an animated Spider-Man movie. They did 21 Jump Street, and can seemingly do no wrong at the moment.
Busy fellows.
Yeah.
They're going to be directing The Flash for DC as well. So
yeah.
And you said there, so no Marvel movies here, but I did see some posters for Ant-Man. I mean, is this, do they typically not show a film at Comic-Con when it's, you know, a week from...
Well, it's very close. I mean, there's usually some promotion, and it, there will be a presence. And
so that's what you can see in the convention center, really.
Maybe it's just on a really tiny screen somewhere.
Yeah, right.
It's actually screening right now, just down there.
There's always someone who there's a lot of sponsorship that goes on here. You can see the side of the buses and the trolleys are all sponsored by people. The lampposts are all sponsored by people, the convention center itself. So the lamppost inside the convention center is Ant-Man this year. So it kind of feels like it has a presence, even though it's very close to release.
I saw a lot of posters for Heroes Reborn.
Yeah, they're very big.
I should be excited by.
It's difficult to know because Heroes was one of those where that first season was the best thing ever, and it was like a self-contained story. And this was actually before the huge explosion in superhero movies. I mean, they were doing quite well, but it was before the Marvel Cinematic Universe had started, and it felt great. And then it was just this gradual decline as it went to sort of suddenly, oh, no one cares anymore.
Yeah, it faded away very quickly. Actually, I think it was a rapid decline. I think it went from being unmissable to being unwatchable in the space of a season. In fairness,
but I mean, I think it took a long time. I mean, it got to its fourth season. Yeah, and so people were still watching to a point. And then, absence makes the heart grow fonder and everything. And
let's have another go, basically.
Tim Pring, the creator's back on board.
Is that not the Hollywood motto?
But I think that is the big thing with Hollywood now. It's very, you know, you look at Edge of Tomorrow from last year, which was one of the best.
I loved it.
It was brilliant. It was clever. It was different. Great performance from Tom Cruise. Did things you didn't expect. But it didn't do very well at the box office. Mm-hmm. And it was an original property that didn't do very well. And if you look, everybody is trying to look for a franchise where people recognise it, and you don't have to do the groundwork to say, this is what my movie is about, this is what my TV show is. And I think we're just going to see that more and more. It's going to get harder and harder for someone to get, and unless you're James Cameron, to actually get traction on a new idea.
Yeah, although, and similarly in the realms of Let's Have Another Go, that's coming back to Deadpool, essentially what they're doing with Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Trying to make him a superhero. You tried to do that with Green Lantern, that didn't work, Let's Have Another Go.
Is there anything original that you've seen that seems interesting at Comic-Con?
Well, so there will be. And again, it's all about Saturday.
Right.
So,
it's all about Saturday.
Crimson Peak, very exciting.
Oh, that's the Del Toro.
Guillermo Del Toro with Tom Hiddleston and Jessica Chastain, Mia Vasquez.
I forget that he makes really good movies when he's not cancelling video games.
Actually, we're hoping to meet some of the cast from Crimson Peak in the next couple of days, so there should be some footage of that on the site later.
Similarly, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Okay.
Which is interesting. So, of course, that's the mashup between Jane Austen and Zombies. So again, there'll be some stars here for that, which is pretty exciting.
I went to the CBS press room this afternoon. They've got a couple of new TV shows, and one of them is based on Limitless, the film, which I love the film. That's an interesting spin-off show. But there's also a new property. They've got a new show coming out called Zoo, which is about the all the animals on Earth turning against humans in a kind of...
It's like The Happening.
Yeah. But
not the trees this time.
Not the trees.
The trees are leaving us alone.
This time it's the
movies. It's the animals.
And it's quite an ambitious project and a new franchise, and that's an interesting thing for them too.
But if you look at in the science fiction arena, most of the shows that have been commissioned are things that you recognise. I mean, even if it's not a comic book movie, you've got Minority Report and Limitless. Mm. These are things that people will recognise the film. There isn't very much where it's like, oh, that's an interesting idea. I've never seen that before. It's all recognisable franchises.
That's true, but I think Limitless was quite an indie project or left field project, certainly when it came out. And it's quite, I don't know if you saw it, but the story of it is basically like a guy takes drugs and is brilliant.
Right.
And the moral of it is just don't stop taking drugs. And like, if you stop,
that's what my mother always used to say.
just keep taking the drugs. So it was quite edgy. It was quite an edgy project. The TV spin-off has a police procedural element to it.
It has a police procedural element to it. I mean, this time the guy, although Bradley Cooper is involved, he's exec producing any cameos in it, but actually it's a different character who's the lead in it. But the way they'll make it episodic is that he has to solve crimes for the FBI. He takes his pill and he helps the FBI solve crimes. So in many ways they're sort of describing it as being like a superhero show in disguise. But it does have that sort of slightly dark edge to it, because essentially it's about a character who's addicted, and his addiction happens to be useful in this ongoing plot arc.
So it's all right to take the drugs as long as you help the police.
Yeah.
Right. It's offsetting.
That's clear.
Correct.
What you want is you want to take drugs and make sure that you're in some kind of television show or movie, because then it's fine.
Yeah.
But that sounds interesting, and I think you could fairly say that television is much better than film right now.
I won't have that.
Well, actually, Dustin Hoffman said that the other day.
Ever Hoffman?
But I think TV is in one of its best ever periods, and has been for a while, and I think, you know, you've got things like Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, which are both critically acclaimed and are getting good viewing figures, and you know, people are making really good television, and you've got new people entering the field all the time. So people like you know, Netflix have come in, and they,
Amazon,
you know, and Amazon, and then they're doing interesting things. It's a very competitive market.
It's a sweet spot between access and serial storytelling, and exploring subjects to a depth that films usually don't.
Right. Well, exactly.
Yeah. And also, I mean, it was DVD that did it, really. The, you know, the box set. You know, the idea that people were suddenly not just watching it when it aired; they were actually binge watching the whole thing. And now the arc plot has become key. And you look at Breaking Bad, for example.
Breaking Bad is amazing, but I definitely don't think you can say TV is better than film.
But also, TV.
So, for example, shocker, I don't watch Game of Thrones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't be bothered now. It's too like I can't be doing with it because everyone's like going on about it. It's like
it's only 50 hours.
50 hours, exactly. So, like, whereas something like, you know, Whiplash, which is just
it's shorter than AI,
exceptional film, which is like, you know, which is so invigorating, it's so exciting, and like that was like a first time director brings it to Sundance. It's one of
punchy,
the best films,
you know, to the point.
You can't say, oh, it's not as good as Game of Thrones, though. Like,
yeah,
it's
that's
orange.
That's fair.
I know. But I think the difference is that TV is in a period when it's probably as good as it's ever been, and you know, that's probably not true of film. Though there are a lot of great films being made.
It depends how you're judging it. I mean, obviously, like Jurassic World comes in and like breaks the kind of $1 billion mark so ferociously quickly. And okay,
undeservedly,
I could not agree with you more. I really did not get on with that film at all. But then you do have something like Whiplash, which can exist, which is funded by Sundance, which came from, it was made in a year. It was a short that guy made, and it comes out, and everybody completely embraces it. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, I remember going to see that at Sundance for the first, at the premiere. I didn't even want to go because it was a movie about a jazz drummer. But, you know, it's exceptional. So, you know, there's a lot of nonsense being made. And then there's a lot of brilliant stuff being made.
Actually, it's a good area of creativity. Well, there is rubbish being made at the blockbuster end. There are a lot of very good blockbusters being made. Mm-hmm. I think.
And Marvel and Disney being.
Yeah, I think one of the big things there is that, you know, probably 15, 20 years ago, people who were greenlighting blockbusters didn't really know what a good one was because they'd not necessarily grown up on it. But now the people who are making them are like J.J. Abrams, they're the Star Wars generation, and they kind of get it, and they're kind of steeped in it in a way that perhaps people who are a generation older weren't.
True. But also, I think we're seeing producers, people like Kevin Feige, taking risks on younger directors. So, for example, Fantastic Four is coming out in August, directed by Josh Trank, who made Chronicle. And Chronicle was a great movie, and it was an original property, and now he's given Fantastic Four, and I haven't seen it yet, but I'm quite excited about it. And similarly, Deadpool is Tim Miller, who hasn't really done anything particularly big or, you know, noteworthy. James Gunn again had
and
made.
And who's on Spider-Man as well?
I can't remember. Oh my God.
He really isn't a newcomer. I mean, he was a very surprised.
Someone
who's
probably a teenager. He's probably still in high school, everything else about the new Spider-Man.
Yes, but you know, James Gunn had been around for a long time. He, you know, he started working in
Troma. But he didn't seem like Tromeo and Juliet.
I think he was on Poultrygeist, Chicken.
You don't even say more than Poultrygeist.
You know what I mean? And you know, obviously he made Slither, which was brilliant, and Super, which was really, really edgy. And then he's given Guardians of the Galaxy, which is huge. And it's potentially very risky to give it
to
him.
Well, I think John Favreau won Iron Man. You know, he made Zathura and Elf. You know, he didn't seem like I do love that, but he was arguably best known for being Monica's boyfriend in Friends.
They're not taking risks in terms of properties, and yes, it is all about franchises and it is all about recognisable brands. At least there's a chance with some younger directors to be coming into it. And again, I don't know if this is a great road for me to be going down, but I'm hoping that that will mean that we'll start to see a little bit more more female directors, because you're not seeing in terms of comics.
Well,
but in terms of comic movies particularly are female directors. But personally, for example, Jennifer Kent, who made, there's a movie called The Babadook.
Mm-hmm.
It's a horror film. It's really good on Netflix right now.
It's
fantastic. I'd really like to see her do something really big. Because actually a lot of the directors you see did start out in horror. I mean, of course, you know, obviously famously Peter Jackson, James Cameron, Ridley Scott. But, you know, of course, we're talking about James Gunn and now James Wan, who obviously just did Fast and Furious. But also started out with Saw, is now doing Aquaman. So it would be nice to see some ladies.
So you're looking forward to seeing that ecosystem continue pushing new directors into
I hope so,
the position where they control really big properties.
The thing is, it's very much it's kind of like bingo or lot, yeah. Because if they take it on and it's not successful, it can kill their career. Mm. So when I spoke to Colin Trevorrow about directing Jurassic World, I mean, he was very conscious. He said to Steven Spielberg, "Well, it doesn't matter for you if this film doesn't work because you're Steven Spielberg. But if I screw it up, I'm going to be the guy who screwed up Jurassic World, and I'll never work again." Yes, and so there is that risk when you
right. So then, is it worth mentioning the Josh Trank factor in terms of Star Wars, because it's not that he's done anything wrong, the guy's not working on Star Wars anymore, but I don't know how that's going to impact him going forward. I mean, let's hope Fantastic Four is brilliant. I'm such a big fan of Chronicle, I'd really like this to work out, but again, it's such a massive risk that if you get pulled off a project like Star Wars, well, how's that going to work out for you?
So when you mentioned women directors coming in and being just a little more prominent than they are now, when we left E3, I feel like a lot of people left that show feeling that a lot of the big publishers had finally heard some of the requests of better representation and they were more female characters in the leads of games. Do you feel like that's filtering through to the region that you cover? Like, are we seeing that at Comic-Con yet?
I think people are aware of it. I think awareness has definitely risen, but I don't think it's changed. I mean, I think we're going to see Wonder Woman as the first standalone, but personally, I mean, so I haven't seen the film yet. I haven't seen the footage on Saturday. I'm very excited. But Gal Gadot isn't who I would have chosen.
Right.
Partly because she's just not a big enough name. And I worry that you give someone who's virtually unknown their own standalone, that it won't be a success. Whereas, of course, Black Widow, Scarlett Johansson's character in The Avengers, she's amazing. She's a brilliant character. And yet she still doesn't have a standalone film.
Right.
And that, to me, is a bit of a
And there's a fear that if that film fails, the wrong lessons will be learned.
Then people will say, it's because women.
Exactly.
And it's like, well...
Exactly.
And I think the director, I mean, Hollywood is, there aren't very many opportunities for female directors anyway. You know, you just look generally, you know, female directors are incredibly underrepresented, but in the big films, certainly, in blockbusters.
Right, so last year, of the top 100 films, there were only two that were directed by women. One was Carrie and the other was Frozen. And Frozen, of course, is wildly successful and also has female characters. So, I mean, maybe it would be nice to see those.
In TV, there are, you know, there's a lot of female writers and directors who are actually, and showrunners who are actually, you know, very successful. TV is ahead of movies in that by quite a long way.
TV's better movies?
That's not what I said.
Well, I was going to say, however, a minute ago, we were just talking about how Hunger Games owned the floor today. Oh, yeah? And Hunger Games is, in fact, Jennifer Lawrence vehicle. And so let's not forget, rule that out.
They are directed by a guy. It would be lovely if they weren't, but, you know.
I mean, and they're well received, but I think those movies are actually underrated to some degree. I think they're really, for a blockbuster film, I think they're way more intelligent and topical than
yeah, I think that the fact that they, you know, the term YA doesn't, you know, some people just dismiss it, and you know, there's so much good stuff made that is, you know, inverted commas YA.
Yeah, the trouble is that, again, I think that YA is quite an interesting area, because so Harry Potter did amazingly and Twilight did amazingly, and then everybody wants to get the thing, and the Hunger Games became the thing. But for every Hunger Games, there were lots and lots that just haven't taken. There were lots of
like Maze Runners.
Actually, I thought the Maze one was pretty strong, and that is getting a sequel. But for example, the Mortal Instruments, Vampire Academy, I think that happened.
It happened.
Yeah, there were lots of these ones that came along and disappeared. I mean, Ender's Game was all right, but again, it just didn't. It never really got traction. I think Percy Jackson never became the thing they wanted it to be.
No.
The Golden Compass, they made one, it was rubbish. You know. So the Divergent Insurgent series is doing okay, I think.
Yeah. Yes, it is, yeah. I mean, it's kind of behind The Hunger Games. But I mean, the thing is, The Hunger Games has got such a great hook. There's Jennifer Lawrence, who is brilliant, but there's also just the hook of the idea. You know, it's Battle Royale with kids.
Right, and it's also about something. I feel like it's a little more substantial than we are trying to adapt something.
Donald Sutherland talking about it, and he says, well, you know, I think this is good because it makes kids think about
propaganda
about the authority and challenge authority.
And I think that's a problem that sometimes Hollywood falls into, a trap they fall into, which is they see the success of something like Hunger Games, and then they think, people like young adult movies, let's make a load of young adult movies. But actually, they don't. They like The Hunger Games.
They love bows and arrows.
It's the Harry Potter phenomenon as well. The things like Percy Jackson that came after that, because people wanted a young adult fantasy. People weren't into young adult fantasies, they were into Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm quite excited about the new J.K. Rowling-based movie that's going to come along, because I think that
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. I might, but also I'm sure that'll do really well.
Oh, it's of course Eddie Redmayne.
Great choice. Yes, that should be good.
Insert Jupiter Ascending reference here.
Well, do you know, I'm controversially, I actually think Eddie Redmayne was the best thing about
Jupiter. I think he was great in Jupiter.
Me too.
It's like we mentioned it on the previous episode of the podcast, which is why I bring it up, because that movie is, you leave it and you're like, that was definitely not a good movie. Definitely not good, but
I don't think we're going to agree with you here.
I still enjoyed it.
I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was,
I did as
but
well.
I just don't think it's good. I just think it's really fun.
I thought it was just like,
I thought it was high camp, basically.
Yeah, yeah. It was just like, it's just mad.
It's like a beautiful
and it just mess.
Right.
It revels in its madness. You know, it's just saying I'm creating a big, crazy, huge space opera. Doesn't necessarily make any sense. But
yeah.
Right.
But it was proper cinema, wasn't it?
Yeah. That's what the Wachowskis are really good at and are perhaps underrated about. You know, they've made some...
They just made really good TV, I think. And Sense8. I thought that was an excellent series, so... TV is better than movies. Well, that was a great segment.
Whoa. Oh my god.
I learned about film.
Can you believe all those people came in here and just recorded that segment real quick?
It's weird that we recorded the show linearly.
Yeah.
And without interruption.
That's how the best directors do it.
Yeah,
they shoot,
just, like,
they go
out,
from
like,
straight start to finish.
Yeah. We definitely didn't edit that part into this
episode.
Well,
we did an entire panel today about what made this podcast special. It was a one-take podcast.
One take.
It's always a one-take wonder.
This is the Birdman of podcasts that we're doing right here.
So... I would like to hear one piece of advice for someone who plans on attending Comic-Con the future, just based on what you've seen and, you know, felt.
So, as somebody who's going to attend Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con 2015 or...
2016.
2016.
So, give them one piece of advice.
I would say my one piece of advice is I understand your passion for cosplay. I understand your desire to be the character you love. Mega Man does not look good.
We did have
good
an extensive discussion.
With human proportions. Do not try to make your Mega Man costume work. Mega Man is a small cartoon boy. You are a human person with human legs and human feet. Do not try to make your Mega Man costume work for dramatic effect. Comedic effect.
What if you're
a
little boy?
If you are a little boy, be Astro Boy. Be one of the many different robot boys that you can be.
Don't tell me what to do.
I'm saying that, like, maybe
you're not my dad.
Don't fight for everlasting peace. My advice for all Comic-Con voyeurs. That's a weird Freudian slip.
But now they have
slip.
A sweet helmet that Capcom's selling, or letting you pre-order.
Wear
no.
the helmet.
No.
Just don't
just
do the full body.
Oh.
Just don't
just
do the
upper
full
half?
Body. You could do the hat and the cannon. The hand cannon,
the blow up one that they also
you can get
saw.
The yeah you can get the blow up one.
That's
just
fine.
don't do
the
blue
the
sweatpants.
Samus, the Samus cufflink.
Yeah, you could do that. That's my advice. That's my. You don't have to follow.
How about you, Sevilla?
Comfortable shoes.
Mm. Yeah, a good pair of shoes will really help you.
Because you're walking miles from just one end of the convention floor to the other.
It is a very massive convention.
It's Battlestar.
Yeah.
Max.
I will say, if you're thinking of coming to Comic-Con, be aware that, like, if you're, like, if you think you're going to go to Comic-Con and I'm going to get, you know, these exclusive items, and I'm going to see, you know, these panels with all these famous people, like, I'm going to do all these different things, you're not, because there are people who go to Comic-Con, there's, like, a whole convention full of people who are going to Comic-Con just to see, like, individual panels. Like, everything is going to be packed.
Days.
And they're camping days in advance. They're there before you even think of going to Comic-Con. They're already there in line. So, just sort of, like, be smart, be selective. If you do want to go to, like, one of the bigger panels or one of the ones with the bigger stars, like, know that that's going to be the one or two things you do at Comic-Con. And just, you know, be realistic
about
that.
So you're managing expectations.
Managing expectations and just get in line crazy early.
Bring a sleeping bag.
Exactly, because you're going to be out there a while.